Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Miketz. This week also is near the end of the year, and that means taxes and that means deductions. Please take a moment and consider helping Pardes bring Torah to you and to the students in Jerusalem and to people all over the world. Your donation of any amount will make a real difference. You can donate online at any time via pardes.org.il. Look for the navigation item called Donate in the very top. Thank you very much for making a difference. This week, Miketz with Rabbi David Levenkreuz. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is an adjunct member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. I've had a lot of strange dreams lately, and every time I mention this to people, they start analyzing it and saying, well, maybe this means this, and maybe that means that. And there's almost an assumption, perhaps because we live in a post-Freudian age, or what we perceive of or understand of as Freud, there's almost an assumption that a dream is definitely some message from my subconscious or my unconscious trying to tell me something that I would say is almost, you know, something accepted. And as I said, it probably comes because we live in a world which is very influenced by psychology or by what we perceive of as what psychology says. But if you open up the Tanakh, you will find a very, very different understanding of dreams. In this week's Parsha Miketz, which we know has a lot to do with interpretation of dreams, if we look at Bereishit 41, we read the whole story about the wine steward saying to Paro, it's the first text on your sheet, we read about the wine steward saying to Paro that there's a young Hebrew man, and they call him, and he goes to Pharaoh, Yosef goes to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, I had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. I heard that when you hear a dream, you can explain it. And Joseph says the classic words to Paro, it is not by my own power, but God may provide an answer concerning Pharaoh's fortune. Elokim yaneh et shalom Paro. It's God who's going to do it, not me. I am just the conduit for telling what the dream means. Not only over here do we have a very strong idea that there is a meaning to the dream and that it comes from God, but there's one meaning. It's clear. There's a correct understanding of it. And this is echoed in the second source sheet in front of you in the book of Daniel 2. Again, the king says to Daniel, very, very similar to the story that we have of Yosef, can you really make known to me the dream that I saw and its meaning? And Daniel answers, the mystery about which the king has inquired, wise men, exorcists, magicians, and diviners cannot tell to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what is to be at the end of days. Again, very, very similar to the Joseph story. The dream comes from God. It has one interpretation, and there is a correct interpretation in as much as a human being gives it. They are just acting as a mouthpiece for God. So where does that leave us today with our dreams? It would seem, according to the Bible, and there are people, in fact, who do this, that we should go to a dream interpreter, perhaps a Rav, perhaps a Kabbalist, perhaps a psychologist who, this is their expertise, and go to them and ask them to tell us what our dream means. Some people are comfortable with this, but I think for many, many people, this does not fit in with their way of thinking about the world. What I'd like to do today is look at two pages from the Babylonian Talmud, from Brachot, pages 58-55b, and look at the ways in which this idea of the Tanakh, that a dream is an absolute and correct message from God, are tempered by the sages. My purpose in this is not to show that Judaism got there first. Hey, wait a look a minute. What modern psychologists say is already in the Gemara. This type of apologetics is not really of interest to me. I don't find it helpful. On the other extreme, neither am I interested in showing, hey, wait a minute, look how up-to-date Judaism is with the idea that somehow, if I can just prove to you that Judaism is modern, you'll be rushing and wanting to keep it. This I also don't believe in. Why not just keep to the original? What do we need Judaism for? What I am doing today, what I would like to do together with you today, is look for those places where things in the Gemara fit in or echo or are attuned with ideas that we have in the modern world, and to see whether we can have a dialogue between these. Because that is where I feel the Gemara and the Tanakh have something to teach us, where there's certain directions that we are going in anyway, but where there might be a twist or there may be a different way of looking at it. I'm not looking today to prove that what is in the Gemara is superior, correct, and unique, but rather to see how can understandings that many of us already have be expanded and enriched by what is written in our texts. So, let's start learning together. Brachot 55a, Rab Chisda said, a dream which is not interpreted is like a letter which is not read. Chalmed olo mafsher ke igrita delo mikre. I have to tell you, when I read it, my immediate thing was like, oh, of course, we should go interpreted dreams. A dream which is not interpreted is like a letter which is not read. Obviously, I should go and interpret my dreams. It's very, very interesting. The sages go in a different method. Rashi says, as long as it hasn't been interpreted, it doesn't do good or harm. And I think it's true about letters. There's certain letters that maybe I was sorry that I ever received, and I would have been happier never to have received it. But it's fascinating. There's an idea over here that if you have a dream, you can just leave it. The moment that one starts interpreting it, the moment that one starts taking note of it, then it has a degree of influence. And I think what this is hinting at is that the meaning of a dream is influenced by the interpretation given to it, and we are the ones who decide in some way whether to give it power or not. And I'm not an expert in this, I'm really not, but from what I understand, the trends in the world of psychology are very much away from this idea that if you dream X, it means Y, and much, much more that what's important is the interpretation that the individual gives to it. Here we go even a little bit further, and it's saying, if you want to let sleeping dogs lie, you can let them lie, but if you want to start going into the world of interpretation, be willing to go where it takes you. Moving over to 55b, and this one I find absolutely fascinating. Rav Huna Bar Ami said in the name of Rav Pedat, who had it from Rabbi Yochanan, if one has a dream which makes him sad, he should go and have it interpreted in the presence of three. And then the Gemara asks the question that is obvious based upon the previous statement. Should he have it interpreted? It didn't Rav Chisda say a dream which is not interpreted is like a letter is not read. Why go there? What are you going for? Say rather then, he should have it remedied in the presence of three. He should go in front of people and they should remedy him. Let him bring three and say to them, I've seen a good dream. And they should say to him, good it is and good it may be. This I find fascinating. The idea of remedying a dream in front of three people. It could be a form of magic or exorcism. It could be a ritual, but it's not group therapy. It's not group therapy, but it hints at group therapy. It hints at the idea that sometimes something unsettling happens to us. We can think about it. We can examine it. But sometimes we need community. Sometimes we need somebody else to help us along the way. And this community can sometimes not behave towards you as an equal, but rather in a ritualized way. And it's very, very fascinating. I work as life coaching as well as teaching Torah. And I've often seen the power that can come from a ritual, that sometimes a person can read, they can understand, they can talk. Sometimes there's a need for a powerful ritual and for other people to help one through it. So I think already we've received two very interesting principles that can complement other ways that we may be looking at our dreams. One is that we have a choice whether to go with our dreams or not, and it's perfectly legitimate to leave things to the side if that's what you feel is better. Secondly, there is a place for help from other people, and there's place for ritual. In the next text, it says, when Samuel had a bad dream, when Shmuel had a bad dream, he used to say, the dreams speak falsely. He would quote from Zechariah, from the book of Zechariah, where it says, V'achalamot hashve yedabru. The dreams speak falsely. When he had a good dream, he used to say, using the same words from Zechariah, but adding a question mark, one can do that in Hebrew, V'achalamot hashve yedabru. Do the dreams speak falsely? How can that possibly be, that the dreams feel falsely? And I'm getting very enthusiastic today. I love this piece because it's saying something very, very powerful. It's saying it really is in our hands. If we have a bad dream, it's okay to say, oh, that's just a dream. What does it mean? We have a good dream? Ah, that might portend something well. Again, very akin to certain ideas in positive psychology, where the emphasis is on looking at the good and the strong that is in our life and building on it rather than being fixated with that which is difficult. But I just love this piece that Samuel is so confident that he's able to say, if I have a bad dream, it's nothing. All dreams could just be some neurons or whatever it is floating through my brain. But a good dream, that means something. So again, a number of principles. We have a choice whether to go there or not. We can use people to help us understand our dreams and get over them. And we are the ones who decide whether a dream is true or not. A slightly different idea is in the next piece. Rav Bizna ben Zavda said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, by the way, this is a different Rabbi Akiva from the famous one. This is Rabbi Akiva who was an Amora, who was later than the Mishnah, who had it from Rav Padna, who had it from Rav Nachman, who had it from Rav Biriam, reporting a certain Elden, who was this Rabbanaya? He says, there were 24 interpreters of dreams in Jerusalem. Once I heard a dream, and I went round to all of them, and they all gave different interpretations. I think some of us might have been in this situation where we have a question of Jewish law, and every rabbi seems to give us a different answer. Here we have people giving interpretations, and all of them were fulfilled. Why? Because a dream can have multiple messages, all in the same God. Each one saw an aspect of this, all were valid, and all became true. Thus confirming that which is said, all dreams follow the mouth. In other words, the dreams follow the interpretation that we give them. And I think over here we have two very powerful ideas being mixed in some way. One is the idea that the dream really has an absolute meaning, and each one of the 24 interpreters saw a different aspect of it, but also the idea that how one chooses to interpret influences one. And interestingly, here it is from, here the interpretation is from the outside. And again, I think that there are lots of things that can help us over here. The value of somebody from the outside helping you to understand. The idea that a dream can have multiple meanings. In the Tanakh text we looked at, there was very, very much an idea that everything has one meaning. Here it can have multiple meanings. And again, the power we have by it. Perhaps the most startlingly modern idea is the last one that I've given you from Brachot 55b. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein manrin lo le'adam ela mehir hurei libo. A person is only showed in a dream what is suggested by their own thoughts. This is in stark contradiction to what is written in Bereishit and in Daniel. Dreams are based upon one's thoughts when one's making. And Freud, of course, said that certain thoughts which during the day are suppressed to the unconscious reappear in a dream where they find gratification. This is very, very powerfully saying, you know something, people? Dreams are not necessarily only from God. They're not necessarily a message. It can also be from what comes from inside you. And finally, if we look at Brachot 56a, it says, Bar Hedya was an interpreter of dreams. To one who paid him, he used to give a favorable interpretation. And to one who did not pay him, he gave an unfavorable interpretation. My laugh, my humorous understanding of this is why you should pay your therapist and not go to therapy for free. But I think that there's also something very powerful going on over here. Payment means giving something of yourself. It means giving up something of yourself. If we want our dreams to be good dreams, if we want them to have value and meaning in the world, we need to be willing to give up something of ourselves. We need to be willing to put in the work. We need to be willing to be lacking in some way in order for those dreams to come out. So when we look at Brachot, we have a very, very different idea of dreams than what we have in the Tanakh, where it's much, much more, you know, this is an encoded message from God. We have messages about the human being and their own ability to interpret dreams. We have the idea that other people can be of help to us in interpreting our dreams, that ritual can help us in terms of the effect of dreams. We have an idea about how powerful we are when it comes to interpretation. We have the idea of the value of other people in helping us through things. We have the idea of to what a large extent our own interpretations of the dreams are important. We have a very powerful idea that a dream may not just be from God, but also based upon things that we might be feeling. And finally, if we want our dreams to be of value in our lives, we need to put in the work. I don't claim that this is better than what some modern psychologists might say. I don't claim that it's worse. But what I do believe is that using these principles in our own self-work can be of great value. Sweet dreams and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.